and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. I'm Trev, and live from East Grinstead, it's Ben.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
What an introduction. What have I done to deserve that?
No, I was just trying to... I felt that after last week's podcast, which, if I'm honest, it was a bit anus heavy. No, there's a lot of stuff about the anus last week. And I thought this week we'd probably try and class it up a little bit. So I thought, give it a big intro, make it sound like we're a big classy act, that we could have our own residency in Las Vegas. That's how classy we are. We could be the new... What were those two guys... with the Tigers?
Siegfried and Roy.
We could be the new Siegfried and Roy and get our own little gig in Las Vegas. I mean, I'm not saying we would do Tigers. I don't know if that would be our thing, because that would take a lot of work. And, you know, I'm not sure we should be using animals in live performances. I don't know what we could do. We could just turn up and do this. But I'm not sure any Las Vegas venue would give us a residency just for this.
No, and I think if you and I were let anywhere near a tiger, the podcast would come to an abrupt end after about 20 seconds, and that's generous. And then it'd just be the sound of gnawing on our corpses for the next sort of, well, until somebody pressed stop.
I tell you what, it's a good idea for when we do finally decide to hang up the headphones for the very final episode. See how long we can survive in with a couple of tigers, or just the one tiger. Why we're having to have multiple numbers of tigers in the room, one will be enough to see us both off, I'm sure. Yeah. But what if one of us was to survive? It would make a terrific end to the series, wouldn't it?
So we'll have to rename the podcast Can Trev and Ben Survive ... and each week it'll be a series of animals, and the podcast ends...
We'll start low with a mosquito. A mosquito that transmits malaria. We could start off see whether we can survive that.
And when the answer to the question, can Ben and Trev, or Trev and Ben, sorry, the billing again, second week in a row, I've got it wrong.
I know.
Can Trev and Ben survive?
You'd want to kill me off very quickly with a fucking tie, wouldn't you, so you could have the Ben podcast?
When the answer to that question is no, they can't survive, that'll be the last episode.
Yeah, but what a way to go out.
So a classier show than usual. Oh, you'll be pleased to know I am sat here in a tuxedo and a little red dicky bow.
That's good, because I'm just in my pants. So anyway, how's your week been?
Week has been not too bad. Same old shit, as they say.
Same old, same old.
You?
Yeah, all right. Although I want to start a campaign.
Right.
I may have talked about this on the podcast before. Years ago, a friend and I had this idea that we wanted to start a thing called the Politeness and Courtesy Campaign.
Have you written another letter to one of your local MPs?
No. No, because this needs to be more widespread than just members of parliament or councillors. This needs to be amongst... Well, this is something that really... This is when I worked at a media organisation, and we wanted the media organisation to run with this campaign. We thought this is something that needs to be out there. People need to be more polite and courteous in life. And it come home to me last week, because I was doing some work for a company last week, just a bit of cover work while someone was on holiday. And I'm not going to name the organisation, but I was just astounded by the lack of politeness and courtesy that I encountered. I don't know about you, but when you work remotely, as a lot of people do now, and I do, I work from home, and you're conversations generally are via emails, so you're going back and forth. Now, I don't know about you, but when I finally send the bit of work that they've commissioned me to do, I sort of just expect some acknowledgement that they've received it. I don't want them to say, oh, that's fantastic, what a wonderful piece of work. I don't need that. I just want to, yeah, thanks, received. And I did three bits of work last week, to which I received absolutely no acknowledgement whatsoever. I can only assume they were happy with the work because they didn't come back to me to say, Trev, that was shit, please do it again. Well, I just thought, what is this? I think they're younger people. Is this the thing with younger people? Am I a bit old-fashioned? Is the new email, sort of quick email society, mean you don't acknowledge something? I just thought, no, I'm done with this rudeness. I just think just a little thing to say thanks, got it, is all
it
needs.
Are you sure that you're not going to get a barrage of angry emails in about 2 or 3 days' time saying, Trev, where the hell is this work have we needed?
Well, no, because it's supposed to be the date for it, the deadline's passed.
So exactly. They might be wondering where the hell it's gone.
Well, why haven't they got it? If that's the case, they should have been in touch before the deadline, shouldn't they? I mean, the deadline, I think, was about last Wednesday. So they're very late in getting in touch with me if it hasn't been received. But also, I know it's been received because it's not like you just email them the work. You actually email it and upload it to their internal sort of system they have for jobs. So I can see it's been uploaded. I can see it's been accessed. So I know that they've seen it. And I just thought, I just think this level of rudeness that exists now. And I see it more and more now. I see when you go out and about, there's a woman who works in my local shop. Very rude woman. She doesn't even acknowledge you when you go in. She just sort of throws a bit of change at you, if there's change to be had. No acknowledgement of your existence at all. And I go in all smiley. I'm smiley Trev. I go in. It's like, oh, hello. How are you? Nothing. Not even a hello back. Just nothing.
Really? You are seeming to rule out the possibility that she might just hate you.
Well, she might just hate me, but I'm not the only one she's like that too, because I know the people that have experienced this. Maybe it's just my family she hates.
Oh,
all my family.
Fucking Smiths
here
again.
Here they come with their jolly way of life and their politeness and smiles.
Well, I also wanted to commend you on your sleuthing skills for knowing that your work has been seen. And I wondered if possibly...
That's pure anger driving that, though. It's just like, I just want to check. Yeah, they've seen it and they haven't been bothered to just say, yeah, thanks.
Could you very passive-aggressively send them a following email saying, oh, I just wanted to check my work for you was okay, because, you know, I didn't really get a response, and I'd hate to think I disappointed you in some way. You know, really lay it on thick.
I can't be arsed, mate.
No?
Not
teach
worth
them
it.
A lesson in manners?
No, not worth it, mate. Not worth it. I just think if you haven't got that sort of manners, I think this is why we need to start a campaign. We need to start... I'd say a national campaign, but I think it probably needs to be international. This needs to go global, that we just try and instill politeness and manners back into society, because they seem to be disappearing. And I know this sounds like a GB News rant. Yeah, I'll be on Dan Wooden talking some real right-wing shit before you know it. Some conspiracy theories. But I'm not asking for much, I don't think. You know, I'm just asking. It's like when you're driving, how many times do people thank you these days? I notice it on zebra crossings. I would always thank the drivers for stopping. But I notice I'm very much in a minority on that front these days.
I think with the old zebra crossing, the problem is that people in general, and I swear it's a combination of since the pandemic and since Brexit, people have just been more and more short-tempered and rude. But I would always thank somebody as going across the zebra crossing. But the sense of entitlement in your average Joe has gone through the roof. And I think the idea that I'm not going to thank this person for stopping at a zebra crossing because I know they have to stop. They're obliged to stop. So I'm not going to thank them for doing something they should be doing. Oh, yeah, it really annoys me that.
And the other thing I hate, can I just say, is if someone's not using a zebra crossing, but just crossing the road where it's not a designated crossing point, but it's fine, we all do it. You know, I'm not suggesting you have to go to an island or a zebra crossing to cross the road. But if you are going to cross at a non-designated crossing point of a road, and I stop to allow you to cross, don't saunter across.
Get a shimmy on.
Like, if someone stops to let me cross a road, I almost, not quite run, but I do, you know, like those fast walkers at the Olympics, you sort of wiggle your ass a bit, you sort of mince across the road at speed. That's
you do that. Mincing across the road. Do you do a little faux jog where you don't actually move any faster, but it looks like you're putting in the effort.
Yeah, because you want to move. But honestly, the number of people you stop, they saunter across the road as if it doesn't matter. Some of them even just stop. Just stop, you know, look at their phone. It's like, Jesus Christ, move, people. I've actually been nice to let you across, and now you're just creating a problem.
I will let people cross the road at there is only one spot I won't let people cross the road. If you're just walking down the road, no zebra crossing in sight,
yeah,
I'll let you cross. Go ahead. I'm patient. I can stop. Cross the road. Fill your boots.
Nice.
If you're at a zebra crossing, fill your boots. You're at the proper place. Cross the road. Happy to help. No, you've waved to thank me and to you, sir. Have a good day. If you're 10 feet from a zebra crossing, I will not stop.
Yes.
Because that annoys the piss out of me. Walk the extra 10 feet, you lazy sod, and use the crossing properly.
Yes, I find that a bizarre thing, that you've got a zebra crossing within reach, and yet you think, no, that's just too much effort to get to the zebra crossing.
That is one of my pet peeves in life, that, when people can't be bothered to... And then they look at you affronted that you haven't stopped for them. You're actually reminding me of... There's a great episode in Frasier, where my favourite show of all time, as people may or may not know, where somebody... general rudeness has been bugging Frasier for a while, and he ends up going a bit ballistic in a coffee shop and screaming at somebody, "What you need is an etiquette lesson."
Yes.
And he throws them out of the coffee shop. So I wonder if your campaign, just as a nod to Frasier and to make me feel happy, could we call it the etiquette lesson campaign or something like that?
Yes, let's call it the etiquette lesson campaign, or just call it etiquette lesson.
Excellent.
That would be the ideal. So we could look at all areas of life. We've talked about pedestrians, we've talked about shopkeepers, we've talked about work colleagues. I think there's all kinds of areas where we've talked about this before, queuing at bus stops. We won't go into that in detail because we've covered that in the past in great length, but that's a bugbear of mine, that people don't queue anymore.
I've got my own slight dilemma, which I'll throw at you. I wasn't expecting to talk about this.
Right.
But basically somebody simultaneously, because I've told you before how at work I seem to be the invisible man.
Mm.
It's a bit of a weird thing. I've been there nearly 4 or 5 years, something like that. Still, a manager the other day asked me if I needed any help. I said, sorry. He said, do you need me to show you where everything is? Are you okay? Are you settling in all right? I said, mate, I've been here 4 years.
Wow, settling in all right. I mean, either you've been so incompetent for the last 4 years, they just go, well, he must be new. I mean, he's just, every day, it's just not correct. His procedures are poor, to say that. But we're given the benefit of doubt because he's new.
But basically, I had a bit of a medical episode recently. I'm fine, nothing to worry about. But a colleague of mine came up to me and she said, oh, how you doing now? You okay, Rob? Now, I appreciated that she was inquiring after my health, because that was a sweet thing to do. But then I was affronted that she called me Rob.
Yeah.
Because I know your name. And I've been here long enough. So I didn't answer her.
Oh, you just ignored her?
I had my back to her when the inquiry came. And I, quite annoyed, thought to myself, I'm not fucking Rob. I'm Ben. I'm not going to even acknowledge the question, because she can't be sure. I think the penny dropped eventually.
Did she get your name in the end?
Sometimes it's Rob, sometimes it's Ben. It depends. And that made me cross as well, because I thought, well, you don't actually care how I am. You're just being nosy, aren't you? You want a little bit of gossip
Yeah.
So, but then I thought, that's...
But that's fine, though, because the gossip will go around that Rob's had a medical emergency.
I could go around telling the managers to fuck off. I could go... Yeah. I could give her a slap across chops.
That Rob is such an arsehole. He's really...
I'll be looking for this Rob.
I'll tell you what, Ben's sweet for a newcomer.
So do you think I was unduly harsh, just not responding?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you were being a little petulant, if you don't mind me saying. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can imagine the anger, and at some point you just go, I'm not doing that today. But you see, I've been in this situation where I once worked at a place and the place was falling apart around me. It was just a disaster of a company. And it was on its last legs. So this guy came in to try and save the company. So I didn't get to know him particularly well. But from day one, he called me Kev.
Oh, if you don't correct it on day one, you're fucked.
You see, I didn't correct
it.
And I think over the period of possibly about 2 months that we had this ongoing, will we survive, he just kept calling me Kev. And I just remember one day thinking, it's too late now, isn't it? I am Kev to this guy.
Well, one... that's really close to Trev.
It's not far, and it is my dad's name, which is a bizarre thing. And I get called Kev fairly regularly, and it's my dad's name, and it is a bit like Trev. But even so, it's not my name.
Yeah, but I can forgive that guy, because that's right. Like he's just slightly misheard it.
Yeah, okay.
The lady at my work, she thinks, oh, it's three letters, just guess. Kev, Ben,
she's got one
Rob,
of them right now, isn't she?
Dan, Tom, just keep going until you get there eventually.
It's really embarrassing if you ever forget someone's name, you know, momentarily. I was at a friend's party a few years ago, and there were some friends of theirs at the party, and I was chatting away to one of the guys there, and then someone else comes to join the conversation. And you know that thing where you sort of have to recap what you've been saying so that the person who's joined the conversation can catch up?
Yeah.
Now, the person I'd been speaking to, whose name was Kevin, in a strange twist of fate. And I've known him for years. He's been at all my friends' gatherings. I've known him for years, right? And I suddenly had this thing. I was just saying to... and he just went... Kevin.
Ooh.
And it was like, you could just see him going, you fucking prick. And I saw it was just an awful moment because I knew his name. I just couldn't get it.
He hung you out to dry there. He should have taken that on the chin and not made it. He made it so much. He's the dick. He made it so much worse.
I felt awful. I really felt awful because it was like, oh, you know, but I couldn't find his name. You know, like when you're just, your brain is looking for it. You know his name. I've known him probably 25 years. I've seen him at so many gatherings. And yet for that split second, his name was gone and I could not get it.
Now, your catch-all get-out-of-jail-free card here is the word mate. But
yeah,
if there's a delay, you're fucked. Because the same sentence works, but it can also not work depending on the delay. Oh, how you doing, mate?
Yeah.
Oh, how you doing, mate? Do you see?
Yeah.
One will give you away. The other one's fine.
Yeah, no, it's a tricky line to tread. If you've done that thing where you've thought you've seen someone you know and you've gone to acknowledge them in some way and then you realise it's not them.
I rather embarrassingly once, this isn't quite the same thing, I did once put my hand up in class at school and say mum.
Oh, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Which was humiliating. I think I got away, well, I tried to get away
with
it.
You didn't get, no one gets away with that shit at school. Like behind your back, you will probably call mum for the rest of the time you're at school. I'm sorry, here comes mum. They never told you that's what they called you, but that's what you were known as. Even the teachers called you that.
But
the headmaster would go, have you seen mum?
That must have happened at your school. Some idiot puts their hand up and calls for mum.
I think it mum? Did. I think it did happen. I'm sure it happened on one occasion. But I once, I was walking down the street and I saw someone who I thought was someone I'd gone to school with. And as we sort of were coming together, I sort of nodded my head, sort of raised my arm to sort of wave hello. And as he approached, I realised it wasn't him. But I'd made these gestures. I'd not said anything. And I thought, oh, I've got to get out of this because he now thinks that I'm a bit odd. So what I did was I continued walking, but I continued making these gestures if I'd had some sort of tick. So that if he looked round, he'd just think, oh, bless him, he's got a bit of a tick, rather than thinking, who the fuck's that? Why is he saying hello to me?
That's some quick thinking.
I also had this thing where... there's some neighbours of my parents who I recognise, but what I discovered only the other day is they don't recognise me because one of them was out and walked by me and I went, oh, hello. And you could just see in his face, he said hello back, but he had no idea who I was. And I just thought, he now thinks that I'm just a nutter.
Yeah.
He now thinks I'm just a bloke. Although it's a nice thing, I think. It's a nice thing that people say hello in the street, even if you don't know them.
Well, that is a bit of a problem for me, because if you can imagine, I have got 500 or 600 customers that I deliver to every single day.
Mm.
Now, to them, they just know who the postie is.
Yes.
So they've got one person to remember. I've got 600 faces to remember. So quite a lot. I'll be milling through East Grinstead somewhere And I'll run into one of the 600, with, you know, the odds aren't in my favour here. And they'll say, oh, hello, how are you? And I've got to sort of play a game of guess who in my head where I'm flipping all the faces down and thinking, who are you? Is it, what street do you live on? Do I know you? Are you a customer? Are you someone I've annoyed in the past? Who are you? So I've got such a big filter process to get through just to work out who's who.
But then nobody expects a postman to really remember you, do they? I mean, you just say hello. And that's it.
People do get a bit affronted if they get the impression you've forgotten them.
Yeah.
They feel insignificant and hurt.
I'll tell you what, I had a bit of a breakthrough moment this week myself because we have a very cheery street cleaner who comes down the road a couple of times a day, sweeping all the detritus up that people... I mean, that's another thing of the politeness campaign or etiquette campaign is stop dropping litter, but that's a... That's a big, big... I mean, fly tipping round here. I mean, geez, I don't know where people find the stuff to do. Honestly, you walk at the end of my road sometimes, there's beds, fridge freezers. You just think, oh, we'll just leave at the end of the road. Why, what is wrong with people? Anyway, we have the street. Not that he's responsible for clearing that shit up. He's just there, leaves and all that stuff. But I've seen him out and about. He's been around for years. And I felt a little bit left out because he tends to have very cheery... interactions with a lot of people in the street. And I thought, well, you know, he's never actually acknowledged me as I've gone by. But then in fairness, I've never acknowledged him, but I started to feel a little bit left out. And then just this week, as I passed him, he said a cheery hello.
Aww.
And I responded with a cheery hello. And the good thing is, I don't think it will ever go beyond that because you don't want to get to that point where it's like you've got to have a long, awkward conversation with him. You don't want to get into that, but you know, now we're kind of we've broken the seal of a cordial hello, and I quite like that. I think that's a nice thing to get to, because as I say, you don't want to get to, because I think getting to that point where you've got to have a long conversation with someone, I find that a bit. I go to another shop where the shopkeeper is very friendly, very nice man, but sometimes he wants to talk to you. And sometimes you think, I don't really want to get into this now, because he might want to talk to you about politics.
Oh, or... I do know what you mean. There are some people I will cross the road to, not because I am a bit antisocial, I suppose, but just because you know that it's not going to be a quick hello, a quick nod. It's going to be 45 minutes here, you know, and I haven't got time for that right now.
Yeah, I had a neighbour who for years lived just down the road from me, and he was one of those, like, nice bloke, but you'd see him and you'd think, oh, I haven't got time for a 45-minute.
Yeah.
Because it'll be a monologue as well. It wouldn't be a sort of conversation, and it would just be about his ailments or his problems. And you'd see him and you'd try and dive into a hedge. Or anything, because if he saw you, he was on you. Like, he was like a tiger. He would pounce on you. And then sometimes, I mean, and again, there's that thing, how long do you give someone in that situation? Because I, again, probably sometimes too polite for my own good, because I would stand there until he worn himself out, which could be 45 minutes to an hour, whereas at some point, I've really got to go.
I hope you won't take offence to what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
But you are so... Well, this is, I'm going to hit you with a compliment than a dig.
You are possibly, Rob. Go on.
You are possibly the nicest person. You will give time of day to anybody. And you give so much of yourself to other people. But you are the biggest chump. That you attract these fucking weirdos. I have never known someone to be such a weirdo magnet. And then you stand and talk to them.
Yeah.
And there was a few times when we were working together, when I'm having to stand next to you thinking, Jesus Christ, the train's coming in a minute. And Trev's still 45 minutes into this chat with this fucking idiot. And of course, and it's of nothing, but you just humour these people. And it drives me crazy. So people don't think I'm exaggerating. True or false, you have had conversations with people that have spanned into the 5 to 6 hour mark over the phone?
Yes, I have. Yes.
No exaggeration.
I was once on the phone with someone who's a good friend, a good mate, but sometimes too chatty. And I think they phoned me up. I think it was probably about sort of, I don't know, 10 o'clock or something one night. I think at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I said, I really have to go home.
I mean, Trev, I love you like a brother, but I don't want to talk to you for 6 hours.
Then, Ben, as we were talking about the lack of politeness and courtesy, it sort of struck me that sometimes you can think there's nothing worse than that. There's nothing worse than people being impolite. And what I've realised about that phrase, nothing worse than, is it's something I use quite regularly. I used it a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and a friend of mine has pulled me up on it.
Ooh, you've been told off.
Would you remember a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about, we got talking about cramp?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, there's nothing worse than cramp. And my friend sent me a message, goes, try childbirth. And I thought, you see, I can't, there's no comeback to that. Fair play, argument won. Hands in the air, I get it, right?
Well, then, I mean, there is a slight defence to say you might be taking our podcast a bit too literally.
But then, you know, I realised that there's a lot of things that we all say, oh, there's nothing worse than. And I thought, I think there's a lot of things that you say that you don't mean it, because obviously there's always things that are worse than these things. So I went through in my mind a lot of the things that I think that I say there's nothing worse than.
Okay.
So one of the stereotypes is there's nothing worse than stepping on a plug.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's rare, but you remember it when it happens.
Or a bit of Lego. If you got.
Unfortunately, I haven't got Lego strewn around the house, but I'm imagining people with young children or grown adults that play with Lego.
I mean, even one of the small bits of Lego, just like a one block bit, if you step on that, it still hurts.
Oh, that would hurt more. The smaller the piece, the larger the pain. That's why people can lie down on a bed of nails. You don't see them lying down on one nail, do you?
No, that's very true. Yeah. There's nothing worse than just stubbing your toe.
Oh, that, I mean, I've cried. I've had tears from stubbing my toes.
Oh,
did I send you that picture once when I stubbed my toe?
I think I think that seared into my brain.
Blood everywhere.
Yes, I do remember that. It's a horrible, horrible thing.
I sent that. Oh, I don't know why I was sending this image around, but I sent that image to another mate of mine.
Yeah.
And his response was very unsympathetic. He said, the carpet, the carpet. I thought, sod the carpet, I might bleed out here.
The thing is though, Ben, once you've had a new carpet, it does become a bit of a problem in your mind that I do, you know, when you sort of have somewhere, well, the first place I moved into, it was a flat, wasn't my carpet, it was old carpet, someone bleeding over it, not a problem. But when I moved into my own place, had new carpets put down, I mean, I'm quite protective of the carpets. So I think, I'd probably be ushering you out as quickly as possible if you were bleeding in my house.
Out of your front room.
Towards the linoed area, please. That's where you bleed, because that's wipe up a ball. The carpet, you've got to go and get some Vanish. It's a whole cleanup you know. So it's that's a big thing, that bleeding on the carpet. So no, I understand that. There's nothing worse than stepping in dog's mess. Nothing worse than stepping in dog's mess.
I mean,
I'm trying to keep it out of that area this week, but you're used to it.
I mean, you can quite easily get rid of that.
What?
Just find a bit of grass or soil and just rub your foot.
Yeah, but it's never quite as straightforward as that. You can smell it for hours, can't you? But we're not going to linger on that this week. Lot of that last week. I'll tell you what, this happened to me this week. Nothing worse than finding the bread's gone mouldy after you've made the sandwich.
Oh, yes, that's a good one.
You know what I mean? I made this lovely sandwich. I was really looking forward to it. Got the bread, buttered it, put the ham in, thinking, oh, this is going to be nice. Put the salad in. This has been turned it over. Green bits all over the bread. Oh, come on.
I wonder if this one applies to you because you're self-employed. So I know you have worked for other organisations in the past, but have you ever done the thing where you go to bed and you have a dream that seems to last all night? It may not have, but it seems to have lasted all night about being at work.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then you've got to wake up and fucking go to work.
Oh, nothing worse.
And it feels like you've just been living in perpetual work. It's horrible.
Oh, that's an awful thing when you suddenly think, I feel like I've done a day's work. And I want to get up and actually do a day's work.
I thought of another one as well. Have you ever sat down and watched a TV show, especially when it's a sitcom or something, with someone who is a big fan of it, and they tell you the punchline before it's delivered on the show.
Yes, yes.
Like karaoke with jokes, carry jokey.
It's
fucking insufferable.
I wouldn't give away a punchline, but I think what I am guilty of is if I'm watching something with someone and they've not seen it before, I will say something like, oh, you're going to love this bit. You're going to love this bit. So I will build it up. I won't give the punchline away, but I will build it up because I know that this bit's coming that I fucking... And there's always a bit of an anticlimax if their reaction isn't quite what I feel it should be. It's also like, there's obviously something clearly very wrong with you if you're not finding that.
Another one in the
wettingly hilarious.
In the similar annoyance of watching things with someone who tells you the joke before it's delivered on screen is someone... naming no names, Mrs. Ben, who will be watching the same show as I am. She'll, you know, we've never seen it before. We've done no research. We're watching the same thing together.
Yeah.
And she'll lean over to me and say, ooh, why has he done that? And I'll say, I'm watching the same thing you are. I've got no fucking idea.
Well, it's what she was hoping for, Ben, is maybe some insight into a situation that she feels you may have. And clearly, after all these years of coupling with you, she still hasn't quite worked out that it's not worth asking you. The response is going to be nothing but aggressive.
She's a lucky woman.
I've got a couple more for you. On the food sort of theme, nothing worse than pouring milk onto a cereal and finding the milk's already gone off.
Oh, what a waste of perfectly good cereal. Oh.
So annoying. So I'm terrible with, I don't use a lot of milk, so I do waste a lot of milk, but I always get very annoying. There are certain milks that you can buy in shops that don't last as long as they should. Do you know what I mean? It's got a date on it, you open it, you use a bit, by the next day it's gone off. You think, Jesus Christ, you pour it on the cereal, you take that first spoonful, and as it gets towards your mouth, you get a whiff of the milk.
Oh.
You think, oh, Christ, that's all wasted.
It could be worse. One of the things that is guaranteed in life to make me heave is the lumpy milk.
Oh, the lumpy milk, that's awful.
Oh.
Oh, if you pour that onto your cereal, it just plops out.
Oh, okay. Enough.
I've had that enough. Before. You go, oh, I really fancy a bowl of cereal. You pour the cereal in the bowl. You get the milk out of the fridge. You think, oh, you look at it. You think, oh, it's in date. You open it. You don't smell it. You don't do the smell test. You just open it. Go to pour it. It's like, plop, plop, plop. Just all this yogurt flopping out. That's wasted everything. And it puts you off for having cereal. You're not going out to buy more milk just to have a bowl of cereal. You think, fuck it, the day's ruined, write the day off, it's done, start again tomorrow.
Queasy.
You're talking of comedy. I tell you what, nothing worse than watching an incredibly rude comedy DVD with your nan.
I went to a Frank Skinner gig. My dad was quite keen to go, and I'm a huge Frank Skinner fan, so we both went to see him, and I was feeling a little bit nervous on the way, because Frank Skinner, for those that don't know, if you've only ever heard him on the radio, he's hilarious, but his live show can be considerably more blue.
Yes.
Than his radio work. It turned out in the end it was basically fine and everyone had a good time, and I didn't need to be quite so nervous about hearing sex jokes in front of my parents. But no, it was fine. It was good.
Well, I once my dear old nan, she said to me once, she said, I do like Sarah Millican. And she'd seen her on lots of the panel shows, like with the Light You and all of those sorts of things. And I went, oh, you know, I like Sarah Millican. I'm a big fan. So I bought her one of the stand-up DVDs, not having really seen much of Sarah Millican's stand-up work myself. I'd seen bits, but, you know, not a lot. And my nan hadn't got round to watching it. And I said to her one day, why don't I come over, right? I'll make her some lunch, we'll have a nice cup of tea. And why don't we watch Sarah Millican? And about 20 minutes in, I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, like Sarah Millican's talking about wanking a man off, and I'm watching this with my nan. It was excruciating. I mean, when my nan finds he went to sleep, dropped off. I thought that's a good thing today. You know, sleep for as long as you want, Dan. I'll watch the rest of this. But it was excruciating because it didn't stop either. There wasn't like one rude joke. It just was going on and on and just getting worse and worse. You think, oh my God, this is awful. That was bad.
Well, I've been looking for things online here. For the things that people say there's nothing worse than. I found a list here. And rather like your friend who pulled you up, you know, comparing childbirth to a cramp.
Yeah,
fair
yeah.
enough. But yeah. I think you might be slightly missing the point of... But, you know, respect. But I think I found something here online which has done the same thing. I'll just read you the list.
Yeah.
A list of top 10 things people say there's nothing worse than.
Okay.
I'll just fly through the list.
Yeah.
Now, one of these things doesn't quite belong in the list. I wonder if you'll spot it. Number one, not being able to remember where you left your car. Number two, kids. Number three, squashed bread. Number four, being corrected. Number five, September the 11th. Number six, doctors with bad breath. Number seven, cabbage. Now, did you notice the one that didn't quite belong in the list?
Was it cabbage? Yeah, I mean, in fairness, there's not much worse than 9/11, is there? There's one thing. There is one thing worse than 9/11, and it's top of my list.
Go on. This better be good. That's a bold statement.
Yeah, no, I think there is absolutely nothing worse than this. Whatever disasters may befall you, there is nothing worse than this.
I'm nervous.
When you leave a tissue in the pocket and you're washing.
Trev, I had a bit of a moral conundrum this week.
Oh, well, I like moral conundrums.
Again, I thought at the time, oh, this is inconvenient. But then I thought, oh, be good for the podcast. Yeah. So here we go. My neighbours have recently gone on holiday, which meant that they had to get the family, the kids in the car, pack the suitcases, drive to the airport.
Can I just say, there's nothing worse. Nothing worse than packing the car when you're going on holiday, is there? Oh, trying to get everything in, trying to work out what's got to go where. I find that, when I'm going away with my family, one of the most stressful parts of the holiday, because not that I necessarily pack in the car, but there's a lot of stress around the packing of the car.
I tell you what, the packing, the loading of the car isn't the problem for me. It's the incessant double-checking. It does my head in. And when you're going on your own, you can double-check it yourself.
Yeah.
But when you live with somebody else who then... You know the passports are in the car. You've put them in there 5 minutes ago. You know they're there. But then the person you live with says, are the passports in the car?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have implanted that seed of doubt, which now means I need to go and check something I know is in the car, is in the car.
But something like passports or tickets, if you're going somewhere and you've got tickets, I mean, I don't know about you, but I am checking them the whole journey. I know they're in my pocket because I'm checking them every 2 minutes. But there is a real inbuilt insecurity in human beings around that sort of thing. But you're right. There's also the thing, of course, when I don't know if this is the same in your family, but when you're going away as a group of the family and you've pulled away from the house, you finally got away, you've finally done all the things, and then someone says, oh, did you shut the back door?
Oh.
And you've got to go back and check. You know it was shut. But I have this when I have to, if my parents are away and they say to me, well, can you come round and feed the fish while we're away? It's like, yeah, no, not a problem. But I have this real anxiety about, did I lock the front door when I left? And I double check the door. I push it when I've locked it up. As I walk away, I look behind to make sure the door's shut. By the time I get to the end of their road, I'm thinking, I did shut the front door, didn't I? And I've got to the point where I don't go back. I used to go back and check. I've got to the point where you know you did it. But it's a weird thing, that, isn't it? It's a very odd thing.
No, similar thing. My dad does it. And I don't know if he still does it, but it got to the point where he would be halfway down the road, he'd turn round, come back home, and he then wouldn't be satisfied that the door was closed. He'd then be pulling on the door knocker.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where he put a split down the wood of the wooden door.
What?
Where he was He was yanking on the door handle so much, the wow. knocker, that it caused a split. And then you'd finally convince him, yes, it's fucking shut. You'd get back in the car with him. 2 minutes later, did I shut the door? Yes! You shut
actually,
the door.
He's actually made the house more insecure than it was.
Yes!
By damaging the door.
And amazingly, like father, like son, he's passed this on to me now.
Right.
Now I can't leave the house without turning around six times and almost shattering the door handle to check it's actually closed.
Why do we do it? I think everyone experiences. This is one of those common conditions that I think every human being has. I'd love to be one of those people. I think a very rare type of person that just shuts the door and goes. I just don't think there are many people like it. It's very odd. Very odd thing.
It is so odd. The neighbour dilemma.
Yeah.
They've gone and we live fairly close to Gatwick Airport where I live.
Right.
And I'm assuming that's where they're going.
Okay.
They've been gone about 90 minutes. So I know that you're encouraged to arrive to the airport about 3 hours before your flight is usually. Is that right?
Standard, isn't it? Standard. Yeah, just get there well early.
So I know they've probably got there settled, probably not on the plane yet, and they're about there. At this point, the gas man knocks on the door.
Right.
I answer and I say, everything all right? He said, we've had a report that people can smell gas in this street. And I've done some detection work and we have detected traces of gas coming from one of the mains here. Do you mind if I do some detection work in your cupboards and think, help yourself, mate, fill your boots? He did all of that.
Right.
Fortunately, wasn't any problem with my house. But then I had this dilemma. Do I now text my next door neighbour and say, by the way, mate, I know you're about to get on a plane and fly and, you know, have a nice 2 week holiday somewhere. You've got your kids with you. You're all fully packed.
Yeah.
It's stressful enough as it is, but your house might be about to explode.
Yeah.
Are you sure you didn't leave the gas on? So my dilemma is, do I do the thing where I do send that text and worry the pants off them?
Yeah.
Potentially over absolutely nothing. Or do I ignore it? And then if their house explodes, then they'll say, hey, you dickhead, why didn't you tell us you could smell gas?
I don't know what I would do in that situation. I really don't know, because I think you'd be torn. It's a horrible dilemma to be in, because there's a bit of you that thinks, well, what if it is their house? What if they have left the gas on? I mean, I think overall, I probably wouldn't send the text. I think I would take the risk that it's probably not their house. And I wouldn't want them worrying, because they'd be worrying all holiday then.
Can I add a little extra wrinkle into this problem for you? Just maybe it'll make you reconsider.
Okay.
My next door neighbour happens to have, as I do, a Ring doorbell.
Right.
So they will have seen and overheard.
That's assuming they kept theirs charged, Ben.
presuming they're more competent human beings than I am, they will have both seen and overheard me talking to the gas man outside my house about this problem. So if the house explodes, they then know that the next door neighbour was well aware of this problem and chose to ignore it.
But hang on, if they've got a Ring doorbell, would they not have had the conversation with the gas man who's rung their Ring doorbell? Because that connects you wherever you are. So wouldn't that respond to that and say, oh, look, we're at the airport. And he'd go, well, yeah, we're just in the area. Yeah, probably not. So then that absolves you of any responsibility. What's the point of having a Ring doorbell if you're not responding to the gas man?
Well, that is a great point. One I hadn't considered, but also one I couldn't possibly know. I couldn't have been privy to that information at the time.
Yeah.
So my dilemma remains the same. Do you phone them up and say, hey, someone smells gas in our street. Do you want to come home? Have you left the gas on? Or do you think, I won't bother them, and if their house explodes, hopefully it'll take the Ring doorbell and the footage with it.
We'll take your house with it as well. That's
I hadn't thought that.
That's the thing. I don't know. I think overall, I'd probably not send them the message. Here's a question.
Go on.
How do you feel about neighbours sharing keys? Because if you're locked out of the house, if a neighbour's got your key, that's a brilliant thing to be able to have that as a backup solution. If in this sort of situation, if someone's away and there's a problem and you can get access to the house, obviously there has to be a lot of trust and you've got to have known that person for a long time. But I think there's something about having neighbours with keys. I'm very lucky in that my parents don't live too far away from me. They've got a set of my keys. If there's a problem, I can go and get a set of keys. But where do you stand on neighbours having keys?
The problem I have with it is that as much as you could trust somebody 100%, if you were burgled by the creme de la creme of cat burglars who leaves no trace.
Yeah.
He's been in and out of your house, robbed you blind, and left no signs of forced entry, and he's out again. You will always have a nagging thought in the back of your mind, was it that bastard next door with my spare key?
Yeah.
And I think that's just not worth it. And I think if you could, I mean, how uncreative do you have to be to not be able to smuggle a hidden key somewhere else on your property which you can access without having to involve a third party?
I wouldn't want my key anywhere outside in where I live.
Well, no, it'd be covered in shit, wouldn't it?
Wait, I just wouldn't trust it. Like in the old days, like my dear old nan and granddad, the key was always under the plant pot. Back in, you know, that was back in the 80s, Ben, when things weren't quite as antisocial as they are now in the Croydon area.
But exactly.
But these days,
I don't want to talk shit about your grandparents, but that's a fairly uncreative solution to that problem.
Yeah, but in those days it didn't matter. Like, everyone had a key under the plant pot. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't, they never got burgled. Well, they did once, but it was nothing to do with
They didn't destroy the credibility of your own point.
Well, they didn't use the key. They smashed a window. So actually, the key wasn't part of the plan to burgle the place.
They smashed it with a plant pot.
But no, I think, you know, I wouldn't have a key anywhere smuggled, hidden anywhere. I like the idea. And I think, again, it's going back to the politeness and courtesy campaign. Ben, in the old days, neighbours had keys of neighbours. My parents still have keys of neighbours just for emergencies. It's the sort of community that still exists in very small pockets. But wouldn't that have been great if you'd had the key to next door and you could have phoned them and said, do you mind if I'm just going to pop in and check? It's absolutely fine. Then they wouldn't have to worry. You wouldn't have to worry. And all it would have taken was a bit of neighbourly confidence in each other to resolve that situation without a lot of anxiety.
I think in the spirit of your etiquette lesson campaign, I will agree that my next door neighbours should have keys. And in the spirit of that, I'll go and kick their front door in now and just make sure that their gas hob is on.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, got some recommendations for you.
Yes, recommendations. I have a small bone to pick with you. Nothing wrong with your recommendation of The Sixth Commandment.
Oh, The Sixth Commandment. Brilliant drama series.
Fantastic, well put together, brilliant show.
Yeah.
I'm episode one in.
Yeah.
My Christ, it's bleak.
Well, it's a bleak story. It's a true story. Yes, it is. It's incredibly bleak. You're only one episode in. It gets bleaker, mate.
As I was watching it, I thought, I'm familiar with this story. I have heard of this.
Yeah.
But Christ almighty, I was depressed after I finished that.
Well, it's a brilliant, I think as I mentioned when I recommended it, it's a brilliant drama series. But then I went and rewatched the Channel 4 documentary about it as well. So I had the double whammy of remembering just how bleak it was. I mean, the bits I couldn't remember. Have you got to the bit where he's writing on mirrors?
No, I haven't.
I'd forgotten that.
Are you confusing this with the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial? I think that happened in that as well, didn't it?
No, I mean I think his name was Ben, the criminal in that particular story.
Yes, it was. I hope you're not trying to sully the good name.
Well, no, I've always liked the name Rob. but no, I mean, there's the thing. You'll get to it where he starts writing messages on the mirror, so the elderly lady thinks they're messages from God. I mean, that's how devious this guy becomes. It is incredibly bleak, but I just think it was just brilliantly done.
Well, yeah, I can't knock the production, but the story is depressing. But yeah, good recommendation, but Jesus Christ.
I do.
Anyway, what's this week's misery?
No, I do tend to like like stuff that's based on true crime. I've become quite addicted to true crime stuff. It's, I don't know what it is. I just think it's because I don't understand. I can't get my head round what makes people do these things. So I just find it sort of fascinating from a human psychological point of view.
Well, actually, on that note, could I put out a request?
Oh, yes.
We don't normally do this, but I thought, well, why not? I like my true crime podcasts,
yes,
especially when they're in storytelling format, with a, particularly if they've got a reveal at the end rather than
please have a reveal. I can't. I've watched a lot of, I like true crime stuff, but I don't like watching 6 episodes of something to find it was never fucking resolved. Got to be a resolution. I've got to know the person's been locked up or he's dead.
I didn't mean necessarily that. I actually meant there are some podcasts I listen to where they tell you in the first sentence that, you know, who did it and how it happened, and then they sort of tell you the sort of chronology of it all.
Right.
But if there's a sort of a reveal at the end of actually who the killer really was, then that's great. So if anyone knows any good true crime podcasts, with that sort of storytelling element, I'd love to know. Mr. Ballin on Amazon Music is one I've rinsed. I've got through all of them, and he's not very quick to upload more than one a week, so I'm a bit short on that. So any recommendations would be very much appreciated.
Okay. The BBC do quite a lot of true crime podcasts now, so that they're worth a check. There's one that I listened to that I think your dad recommended, which was the one about the boxer, what's his name, the Hurricane Tapes.
Oh yeah,
that was superb. So I recommend listening to that if you like a bit of true crime stuff.
Excellent, thank you for wetting my whistle.
A couple of things I'm going to recommend. One is a new series that's been on the BBC, and I think 3 episodes have gone out, but they're all available on the iPlayer, called The Power of Parker. It's a comedy series about a wannabe business guru, and it's sort of one of those comedy dramas in the same sort of vein as The Outlaws. It's kind of got that feel about it.
Okay, well, The Outlaws is good.
Yeah, and I think you've got to stick with it. I think the first couple of episodes you've got to get to know the characters, but I just binged the rest of it the other night and I really enjoyed it. They're only half hour episodes, there's 6 of them, so you binge it quickly. But I thought, oh no, actually that's turned into something very good, and I don't know where it's going to go, but you can see this has got a bit of a life to it. So I very much enjoyed this. It's called The Power of Parker. Did I mention what it was called? I can't remember.
I think you did.
Good. my memory these days, Ben, when you reach my age, I have no idea. And the other thing, I'm tentatively recommending this. This is a family movie. This is probably for people with kids to watch. It's a film on Netflix called Bigfoot Family.
Wasn't there already a TV program about Bigfoot's family?
Well, there was Bigfoot and the Hendersons, wasn't
there? That's the one,
back
yeah.
In the day. Well, this is like an animated movie. It's a bit of a silly film. It's a kid finds out that his dad's a Bigfoot and he has to go and find his dad who's a Bigfoot. But then there's a hair company that want to get Bigfoot. They want to sort of get the DNA for his hair. For a family movie night, if you've got kids, I think it's worth a watch.
And I'd like to recommend Dinosaurs, The Munsters, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. What other shite?
The Munsters. Don't. I want to see The Munsters. I haven't seen The Munsters for a long time. Fucking love The Munsters. Never such a fan of the Addams Family, but The Munsters, love that. So this is a new film, Ben.
Okay.
But it's worth a watch. And you know, I've got into the sort of habit of saying don't watch something.
Oh yeah.
I watched a film the other day called Equals. If you ever see that come up, don't bother.
We had a name for this feature a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, what was it? I can't remember. Something Corner, wasn't it?
But Cautionary Corner?
Cautionary Corner. This is Cautionary Corner.
And we need a jingle.
It was a film, it was on BBC. It was one of these dystopian, you know, future films. And I thought, that looks good. It was kind of in the same vein of... do you remember I recommended a film to you a while back called The Giver?
Yes, I do remember that, yeah.
Which was set in this perfect community in the future. And this was sort of similar. Basically, the survivors of some terrible event, they'd basically sort of had all emotion bred out of them. And if you had emotion and started to fall in love, that was seen as a disease, right? So it looked like a good idea on paper. Oh, I couldn't wait for it to finish. It was only 90 minutes, but it felt like an age.
You know you can turn it off.
I know, but once I'm into a film, Ben, I don't like to give up. I always have hope that there's going to be a big twist, that something's going to happen. And there was a bit of a twist at the end of the film, but it wasn't worth waiting for. So, yeah, just there it is for Cautionary Corner this week. The Equals, excellent, or Equals, whatever it's called. Avoid it. Here we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on... Everyone is calling it X now, Ben. I think we have to bite the bullet.
I'm not doing it.
We're at Trev and Ben on whatever platform it is now. Get in touch with us, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well. Take it easy.
Bye.